Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Playing Well with Others podcast. I'm Jen Baker.
And I'm Rochelle Stojnic.
One of the questions that we get asked a lot about in organization and professional development is for advice on career development. Now, when you work for an organization that has over 20,000 employees, there certainly is a lot of opportunity to grow your career.
And when you think of career progression, it doesn't always look like a ladder where you start at the bottom and work your way up to the leadership at the top. There's a lot more different ways to achieve your career goals. Instead of the image of a ladder, careers are often more like jungle gyms or lattices, where we sometimes need to make lateral moves in which what we're doing is equal to our previous work, but for a different department or organization. Or sometimes we may even move a step back so that we have the opportunity to gain the experience needed for the next step in our career paths.
And careers sort of become like a dance that sometimes you know the moves, sometimes you just are moving to the music. One of our best examples of a unique path is our guest today, Link Butler. Link is our Associate Vice Chancellor in the Office of Human Resources. Welcome, Link. We are super glad that you're here. Welcome. Link has had a very interesting journey both in and outside of UNC Chapel Hill, and we are looking forward to applying some of these lessons that he's learned in our own career paths. Welcome.
Good to be here, and thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do at UNC, Link.
I'm the Associate Vice Chancellor for Human Resources here at UNC Chapel Hill, and that means that I oversee all of the functional areas of HR for the campus, for our staff mostly. I'm also currently interim over the Office of Academic Personnel, so I'm dipping my toe in the water for faculty. Personnel matters too. So anything ranging from benefits and leave administration, employee management relations, recruitment and hiring, records, you name it, that all reports into me.
So basically you have two full-time jobs right now.
just two.
Again.
Just two. For now.
For now, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about how you ended up here in your career path. What did that look like?
Well, honestly, I kind of fell into HR and, I went to Appalachian State University from undergrad. I originally went to be a math secondary ed teacher. And the closer I got to actually having to do that, the more I realized maybe this isn't what I want to do. So I ended up in political science just because I enjoyed the curriculum and really had no plan. I wasn't the greatest of college students, to be honest with you. I was working part-time at the local Kmart in Boone. And when I graduated, the then personnel manager retired. And so the position became open. I said, I think I can do that. And fortunately, the manager gave me a shot at doing it. I quickly realized I had no idea what was going on in the personnel manager role other than scheduling and hiring and that sort of thing. So it was a bit of a trial by fire. And the good news is that I actually enjoyed it. The retail environment aside of having to do the nights and the weekends was really challenging as it is for any retail worker, but it was something I really enjoyed, being able to dip my toe in the water around, all the hiring rules, working with people to help them build their careers in the retail environment. So I kind of stuck with it. And when we found that we were expecting our first child, we decided that we were going to relocate because my wife wanted to be able to stay at home and the retail environment wasn't going to allow for that. And we came down to this area and I got my first job at the university at Tar Heel Temps. I was a placement specialist. I began placing temporary employees across the university.
Oh.
So that sort of launched my higher ed career. And look at me now.
With two jobs minimum at one time. When you think about those earlier days, what are some lessons that you've taken from that time that you're still utilizing in your position right now?
I think the biggest thing is just always being willing to step in where there's a need. And even if that means that you have to step outside of your own comfort zone a little bit, or try something new, or learn something new. That was something that early on in my career here at the university, anytime there was a need, whether it was they needed someone to help with the presentation at new employee orientation, I quickly volunteered. And so anytime projects or committee work came up, obviously raising my hand and stepping in, even though I may not have been the foremost expert in whatever it was we were working on. It was just a great opportunity to learn about the organization, to learn the different aspects of HR, to learn more about what other people were doing in the organization. And it also showed, I think, to the folks who were the decision makers in the organization, that it demonstrated initiative, that I was willing to step in and help. And I think that really helped me as I began to apply for and seek out other promotional opportunities throughout my career.
You mentioned twice that you didn't really know what you were doing when you just enthusiastically volunteered.
Is that what I said?
Sort of. I'll go with that. But what I like about that is that it shows a willingness to learn, but also a sort of you're humble with the, like, I don't know now, but let's give it a shot. I'm willing and able to try this out. And that's something that we often get really stuck in the, well, I don't know how to do that job, so therefore I can't do that job.
Now, that's an excellent point. And there's certainly amount of risk you take on when you do that sort of thing. And there's also the risk of failure, that you get in there and maybe you bite off more than you can chew. And so I think having some sort of self-realization of knowing when to ask for help, knowing who the experts are to go to, and just not believing that, well, I'll just figure it out. And sometimes you do have to do that. But, you know, I've always said, when people ask me about, well, how do you know when you're ready for that next step in your career? And if you wait until you're ready, you'll never move. There are steps I've taken in my career where, you know, maybe I had 60, 70% of what I needed to be able to step into that bigger role. But I knew that there was going to be a lot that I had to jump in and learn, and just whether it's trial by fire or leaning on the experts or trusting the team, that I was going to have to build out some of that knowledge and skill that I wasn't going to be able to take into the role with me. But if I had waited until I was fully ready, I never would have moved into a bigger role.
Yeah, yeah. Just allow yourself that that grace and that ability that, okay, if you fail or if you don't do things exactly perfectly, then roll with it. And there's something to learn from that either way.
Oh, absolutely. No question.
Can I just back us up for a second? I mean, I know we talked about your ascent into UNC Chapel Hill, but once you got into the university, what are some positions or what are some responsibilities that you've had or explored?
Sure. So I started in Tar Heel Temps, as I mentioned, placing temps around the university. From there, I moved into what was then titled as a recruiter role, which handled really for our SHRA employees, our staff employees, you know, posting jobs, reviewing applications. Back then, it was all by paper. So you got the paper applications and you had to review them and you had to qualify them. And then copies were made and you sent them out to campus. So long before the time of applicant tracking systems. From there, I stepped into an employee management relations role. And shortly after that, our HR office began to explore a generalist model. And so when they established the first two generalist positions, I of course jumped at the chance and was fortunate to be hired into one of those promotional roles, eventually became a generalist team lead. And then when we got new leadership, we of course went back to a specialist role. And, so we started moving back into more specialized. I was focused more on employment, class, and comp at that point, before leaving the university and moving to a role at North Carolina A&T State University as their assistant vice chancellor for HR. And so it was that point, you know, I'd always envisioned early on that, you know, I wanted to be at UNC for my entire career, but I reached a point in my career where I realized, you know, I'm probably going to have to step out to step up. And that opportunity became available, and fortunately I was selected for that. And it was a tremendous opportunity to work at an HBCU and one as prestigious as North Carolina A&T. Learned so much. It was a great development opportunity for me. To get my hands into more of the faculty side of the house, as didn't have much of an opportunity to do that here at UNC.
There's a couple of things that you just mentioned, the stepping out to step up, that, you know, when you were just describing your path, you could see that you were kind of working that ladder, that analogy of, you know, here's one role, here's another role. And even though it was within, it was different teams within human resources, but it was still, you know, sort of doing that, that ladder, but then you had to step out of outside of the organization. And that's really helpful just in the sense of being able to see how people do things differently. Yeah. And then, like you mentioned, working for a historically Black university and college to be able to see, you know, just a diversity of how they're working with their student populations and their faculty and staff there.
Yeah. And the A&T experience, and from there, I went to North Carolina Central. So I had an opportunity to work at two HBCUs, and each with a very rich history, a rich culture, very different missions in terms of what they were created to do. And, you know, it's risky when you go to another organization altogether. You spend a lot of time building your professional reputation where you are and being able to leverage the contacts you have, and then stepping into a new environment where you're basically having to start all over again. And so that was part of the challenge that really was appealing to me, was to be able to do that, but also to step into an environment that I hadn't had much experience working in. And again, it was just a tremendous learning opportunity for me.
Speaking of learning opportunities, what were some of the lessons that you experienced in early parts of your career that you use right now, that it's something that just has stayed with you?
There's one that's going to sound very basic, and then there's another one that I sort of picked up along the way. And the first basic one was that you just have to show up. And I mean that in the literal sense of, you got to be at work, and you got to be at work on time, and you got to be where you're supposed to be. But in addition to that, you have to be present every day, present in the moment, present in the challenges that are coming down the pipe, and just sort of having that awareness of being able to either anticipate issues, even react to issues as they come up. And you can't really do that if you're not present in the moment every day. And then the second one kind of goes back to what I talked about earlier, which is, you know, taking advantage of the opportunities as they present themselves. And that means jumping into some things that, again, are going to be a little bit out of your comfort zone, and you have to be willing to take that risk and see what you can learn from it and apply going forward. And even to this day, you know, I'm currently in two different roles. And, you know, that was something that I didn't have to do. The opportunity was there. And so, you know, I thought I could add value in stepping into the interim role, but also at the same time, I saw it as a tremendous learning opportunity for me to be able to learn more about how the faculty side of the house worked here at UNC Chapel Hill. And it wasn't without risk, but again, you have to be willing to sort of take those risks to gain the best from it and to learn the most from it.
Link, what is something you wish you knew earlier in your career that you learned later on?
You know, that's a tough one. I think with any organization, there's going to be some degree of navigating the politics. I think being a little more sensitive to the politics of the organization earlier on, I think would have gone a long way to helping me in my career. You know, when you come in green and you come into a new organization, you kind of take those things for granted. And certainly I think having a better sense of, okay, what's the lay of the land? Who are the key players? Who are the folks that I really need to invest in building relationships in as part of not only my professional network, but just in terms of being able to get things done. And so I think, you know, having a little foresight in that area certainly would have made things a little easier.
For those folks who want to eventually ascend into a leadership role, but they don't want to deal with the politics, what would you say to them?
Then probably leadership is not for you. You know, everybody, I think, has a sense of the overall organization and how their piece fits into it.
Yeah.
But you also have to maintain that view of that you're responsible for a piece of a larger puzzle.
That's right.
And how your organization, how your work overlaps with others is a key ingredient of that. And, you know, if you ignore the fact that you need to nurture those relationships and build those relationships, in order to get the work done, then it's going to make it that much more difficult, not only to get the work done, but you know, it could have ripple effects, not only for you, but for your team as well.
That's right.
And so I think being sensitive to those is really important.
Yeah.
I love the ripple effects, because it's not, especially when you're in leadership, that you, your behavior is also reflected on your, on your team's behavior. Sometimes it's a matter of switching the word politics with something a little bit more,
exactly,
you know, perhaps palatable. So community building, or, you know, team dynamics, like, or things that it doesn't seem, because for me, that's always, that's been a struggle for me, of like the idea of politics just sounds draining, but the idea of building community and making connections, that's very invigorating. So switching,
you're just getting
in
a lay
head,
of the land, right?
You got it. And, right. And you're working with folks of how can you help them? How could they help you? But how could you help everybody to serve the mission that you have?
No, that's absolutely right. And I think also building a common focus is really important as well, of, okay, what are the challenges that we have in front of us that we have to solve? How do we solve those together, as opposed to, well, I'm going to do my part and I'm not really going to worry about whatever it is you're doing, because that just doesn't work. And so that relationship building that you're talking about is crucial to that.
Yeah. For people looking to advance their careers, what would be some of your best advice on how to do that?
Well, I think getting a mentor is huge. Mm-hmm. And that mentor should be, there should be a couple of qualities for that mentor. Number one, they should be in a place where you want to get to in your career. They've walked that path. They've navigated through that web, if you will, to be able to get to somewhere in their career that you aspire to be. And secondly, that mentor needs to be willing to not soften the blow in giving feedback, you know, giving direct feedback, of course, making it constructive. But it's not an effective mentoring relationship if that person can't be open and honest with you about where they see your potential development needs could be. And so I think that will serve someone tremendously well beyond, you know, just the functional knowledge. Obviously, you've got to know what you're talking about and you got to know your business. But I think seeing someone who's been there, who's done it, who's navigated some of the challenges, and being willing to listen to them and receive that feedback in a way that's constructive is going to position folks for success for that next step in their career.
So would you mind sharing with us one of your experiences with one of your mentors and how it's affected you and your leadership style, or, you know?
Sure. And there have been several, some informal and some more formal.
Yeah.
But the one that I'll pick is, well, there are two that come to mind. Claire Miller, who used to be a senior director here at UNC. She's someone who I met very early on in my career. We crossed paths actually when I started helping out with the new employee orientation back when I was a recruiter, because her team was responsible for delivering that. And later on, I worked for her under the generalist structure, and she just tremendously savvy, great communicator, great with feedback, but also really led with compassion. And that was something that I really connected with. And there was so much that she modeled for me in that respect on how to lead with compassion, how to be firm when you needed to be, how to be fair, but also to be compassionate in that leadership. And another person, Matt Brody, who currently works at the UNC System Office, when we got paired up and he was my mentor, one of the things I appreciated about our very first conversation, and if you know Matt, you know, he and I come from two very different worlds, but he said very directly, he said, you know, half the stuff I tell you, you're going to be able to use, and half the stuff you're not, but you've got to figure out which is which. Which is going to work for you and your style and the way that you want to be and the leader that you want to be. And in both of those cases, both with Claire and with Matt, they were very honest and direct in feedback that they would give me, and but always did it in a way that was constructive. And they did it with the best interest of trying to help me reach that next step in my career.
I love you bringing up feedback and being really honest and direct with feedback, because sometimes I think our culture at at Carolina sometimes can be a little bit polite, where we don't necessarily want to, you know, help somebody to understand, you know, no, you could approach this in a different way. And the value of feedback when it's direct and honest, even if it might potentially initially kind of have that gut punch of, ooh, okay, well, that didn't feel so comfortable, but being in that discomfort really can help you grow. And it, as it clearly has done in this case.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all in how the feedback is delivered. And even when it's delivered well, there are times when folks aren't maybe ready to receive it in the way that it's intended. And I don't know that I would just limit that as a challenge just here in the UNC environment. I think that's people in general have a hard time providing direct feedback and being direct, because you want to be sensitive to the other person's feelings. And that's understandable. Unfortunately, in the work environment, you know, one of the things we have to do, especially in a leadership role, is be able to provide feedback and be able to coach folks if they're maybe not meeting expectations. But there's also a fine line, too. Sometimes it's more important that if you have someone on your team that you've given a task to, they may not do it in exactly the way that you would have done it, but it still results in success. And sometimes you just got to trust that and empower folks to use their own way and use their own creativity to get to success, even if it's not exactly the way that you would have done it.
That was a lesson that I learned very early on. I had managed a team of 20 people at some point, and I was very young. I probably should not have been entrusted with managing that many people at that part of my career. And I try to be very clear and succinct with directions, but what I learned is that that's not always the way, that there are people coming with all kinds of different experiences, different approaches. And number one, it makes your employees feel a whole lot better if when you entrust them to take care of things, you get to the same point, it just might look a little bit different.
That's right.
And that's what, you know, that's part of the engagement that people have in the position that they're in, right? Like the freedom to do their job in a way that allows for some creativity or space.
And it builds trust. It builds a lot of trust. Absolutely. When you empower folks to do that and give them that freedom, that creativity to sort of map out the path. And certainly you can provide feedback along the way. If you want to violate that trust, you know, dive in and just say, oh, no, don't do it that way. You have to do it exactly like this.
Right. And then you grow as a manager, but then also you're growing your people. And one of the tips that I had gotten from a manager years ago was that my job as a manager becomes to grow the people on my team. That becomes my primary thing to take care of.
That's a great point. Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
Speaking of continuing to grow, this is kind of piggybacking a little bit on that same question, but for people that are looking to make a really big change, they want to maybe switch careers altogether and do something completely different than what they're doing. For instance, if they are currently working in, say, housekeeping and they want to get more into an office environment, But they love UNC. We get that all the time of, I love working at Carolina. You even said it yourself. What would be some tips that you would give for somebody looking to make a really big career switch like that?
Sure. Well, you have to have a plan. And that plan involves doing a little bit of research, you know, trying to figure out, well, where is it do I want to go? If I'm going to leave this, where do I want to step? What do I want to step into? And that research can take a lot of forms. It can be looking into, well, what are the educational credentials or the skills I need to build in order to make myself ready to make that move and that switch. And then it goes back to that mentoring relationship. Who are the people that are in the roles that I want to be in? And can I talk with them or set up some time to actually just learn from them around, well, what did you do? How did you get to where you are? What steps did you take? But then at the end of the day, there's a bit of courage that you have to muster up to make that change. And part of the equation is financial. You know, certainly you want to take a look at, okay, understanding that I'm going to be making a total career change here, that might involve me sacrificing a little compensation now to get started in order to, you know, get back up to where I was or even exceed where I was in the future. Mm-hmm. So there's sort of that courage that you have to be willing to do that, but certainly having a plan of what does it take from a skill set standpoint, who are the people that have been there, and then what's the financial impact, and do I have a plan for that, and can I make that jump?
thinking again about your career trajectory, what has been something, whether it's an interest or hobby, a side gig, or an early job, that has been surprisingly influential on your career?
Well, there's two things that I can think of offhand. When I was in undergrad, I was a resident assistant for a couple of years, and you learn how to deal with people pretty quickly in those roles. Not only that you learn how to deal with people and interact with people, but even people that are considered to be your peers. And so navigating those relationships can be tricky when you're in a position of either leadership or authority. So that was something that I really learned a lot from. And then, you know, secondly, it's no secret that I'm a musician and play in a band, and, you know, being in a band is much like being a part of a team. And while there may be some pieces that are more out front and some more behind, you know, the front line, the band doesn't sound good unless everybody's doing their part. Yep. And hitting all the right notes and knowing all the words and, you know, that sort of thing. And so understanding the concept of team as a whole, and how to trust your team, and, you know, knowing that your team is going to step in and deliver when they're supposed to and what they're supposed to,
right,
sort of comes from that as well.
You're in a band?
Sweet.
I just need to back up there. Have you seen Link in concert?
I sure have. He puts on an amazing show too. Whenever the world opens up again, I highly recommend. No, we're just going to fill your audiences with only UNC people.
I'll take it.
Still selling tickets. That's good.
That's right.
They're going to ask for autographs afterwards and then career advice because they listened to this episode.
Maybe that's a new venture.
It is now time for our rapid fire question section. Pew, pew, pew. We always say we're going to put in like sound effects, but we haven't actually figured out what sound effects. So for now, you get the pew, pew, pew.
Okay.
Like, I can't do a thunder noise. But these
also,
are questions...
disclaimer, there's no violence involved. There's no fire involved. There's no pressure involved either.
All right. I'll take it.
Okay. So these are questions that we ask each of our interviewees to just... Let us get to know you a little bit better. And it's so interesting to see the differences and similarities in our folks' answers. So we look forward to what you say. So question number one, what would be the title of your autobiography?
How did I get here? you know, this is a tough one. I'm not really, you know, nothing really springs to mind. I do think it would have something around building trust, and maybe that would be it, because that speaks to all the things we've talked about so far of me building trust in others and me doing the things that they can learn to trust me, that I will be fair and that I will have their backs and that sort of thing. So I think building trust is probably the closest thing I could think of.
That's totally on brand for Link. Like if you've worked with him or know anybody who works in OHR, certainly he is a man that we trust. We all trust.
So very much so.
I think that's very appropriate. Okay, number two, what is a hidden talent or skill that you have?
I consider myself a bit of an amateur carpenter.
Really? I've
done a few projects recently. My kids had a wooden swing set out in the backyard, and part of the swing set was a tower that had a slide off of it. Well, I took the tower and I converted it into bookshelf/reading nooks.
Oh,
and
nice.
So they're now in my living room, my flex room upstairs where the kids hang out. And, you know, there are books all around them, and we're all avid readers. And so now they have a spot that they can just sort of curl up and read a book. And so I'm really proud of those. And I had no idea what I was doing going into it. And so just sort of envision, okay, this is what I want it to look like. And well if I'm going to make it look like that, what do I need to do? And so, you know, I wouldn't say that every corner is level and perfectly measured, but it turned out really nice.
It sounds a lot like how you build teams too. You gotta make a plan with what it's gonna look like. It might not all be level, but it'll work.
Oh, that's right. And I also built a coffee table out of a wooden pallet. So
oh, cool.
And it's a lot of fun, and it's, you know, it's great to be able to do something with your hands, and it's, you know, very different from what I do every day. So it's rewarding to kind of get at the end of it and have something that you're really proud of.
Yeah. I don't know. I saw Rochelle's, like, she had a little spark in her eye about, like,
I love power tools. Anyway, that's for another day. But okay, next one. What is your favorite spot on campus?
I think my favorite spot, and this may sound a little cliche, but you know, McCorkle Place, where the old well is, and especially the planetarium and the sundial and the arboretum. And the reason I love that area is especially in the springtime when it's all green, and usually in normal times there's a bunch of students hanging out. But just have some really fond memories of, you know, when my kids were younger, just taking an afternoon on a Saturday and coming down to Franklin Street and walking through there and walking through the campus and seeing all the older architecture around there, which I've always been fascinated by. But just, we've had some really good moments in the family of just spending the afternoon walking, being outside, and enjoying the scenery.
If we ever can hold potlucks again in the future, what are you bringing?
Jessica Pye just would kill me for saying this, but probably something really unhealthy. Just
for the listeners who don't know, Jessica is our wellness coordinator.
That's right.
HR, tries her best to keep us healthy.
Jessica, if you're listening, my apologies, but I would probably bring some form of really cheesy queso dip and cheese.
Oh, nice. Name something you love about your job.
Oh, definitely the teams that I work with, the people that I work with. I wouldn't trade them for anything. And every single team we have has such a passion for what they do and a desire to deliver with excellence, which, you know, it's hard to find that combination of passion and wanting to deliver with excellence. But I think across the board, we have that. And the synergy we have and the leadership team, and then the synergy we have just with one another between the teams. And it's so much fun. It's one of the things I really missed being in this sort of remote working environment is just the conversations that happen out in the hallway and hearing the laughter and the team sort of, and some of that friendly banter that goes on. It's really, I count myself lucky to work with this group of people every single day.
We're lucky to work with you too.
Oh, no, you're great.
Sometimes we're great. Okay, this next one, I know you are a lover of many things, so feel free to choose more than one answer. What do you geek out over?
I've always been a lover of science fiction and fantasy and the whole genre. Big Dungeons and Dragons player when I grew up, and I've still been known to play a game or two recently too. And
what role do you play in Dungeons and Dragons?
You know, I've always been more partial to like a ranger type of character. The mages are just too hard to play. You can breathe on them and they get killed. But I think the ranger type characters are the ones. I've always gravitated to characters like Aragorn from Lord of the Rings, or there was a trilogy of books called the Dragonlance Chronicles that, you know, was one of my first fantasy trilogies reading. And there was a main character in there who was kind of that half elven ranger leader character that I gravitated to. But yeah, I love to read. I love in particular to read science fiction, fantasy books. I love that entire genre. And so those are the things I tend to geek out over.
Who's your favorite science fiction writer?
Or science fiction and fantasy, or fantasy.
Yeah, or fantasy.
Terry Pratchett, no question. He's amazing. His whole Discworld series is just, it's funny, it's deep, it's philosophical. The characters are amazing. I love Terry Pratchett.
If you like urban fantasy, there's now I'll geek out over this is Shannon Maguire. It's the October Day series. She's phenomenal. Yeah, she's I think there's 14 books now in the series, but just really good characters throughout, and quick reads too.
Well, thanks for that recommendation. As far as urban fantasy, one of my favorites is Jim Butcher. He's the Dresden Files series and some others, but I've loved the Dresden books. I think they're on book 17. Two just came out this year, and after a long hiatus that he took. And so I just, of course, burned right through those.
When do you even find the time to read with your at least two job minimum?
Yeah. Not often. But I, my secret is I keep two or three books in my car. I keep a couple at home. And so if I ever have to go out and just grab a quick bite to eat, I want to sit somewhere and eat. I can't just sit and eat. I have to have a book to read. And so usually that's where I get my chances.
Okay. And our last question. When the world does finally open up again, where would you want to go to vacation?
One of two places. My family had a big vacation planned for New York City in July. And of course, we had to cancel it. And it was going to be a very Broadway themed vacation. We had a different show every night. We were going to see Dear Evan Hansen. We were going to see Wicked, the play that went wrong. We had Hamilton tickets. So having to cancel that was just heartbreaking. And, we had, we were really looking forward to that. So I'm hoping to get that set back up. And then I'd love to go back to Edinburgh and visit there. My wife and I went for our 25th wedding anniversary before all the pandemic occurred. And it was just one of the best trips. We did London and then Edinburgh during their big arts festival. And so it was really fun.
Didn't you meet someone very special in your last trip to Scotland?
I did. I met Ian McKellen. He did his one-man show during that festival, which was brilliant. And at the very end of the show, he said that they were taking up collection for to help young artists get into the theater. Mm-hmm. And so you were expecting some buckets to be set up by the door on your way out. But lo and behold, on the way out, there's Ian McKellen standing, holding a bucket, taking collections as people walked out.
Amazing.
It was just...
Imagine Link, though, this like Lord of the Rings lover, and Gandalf is like 5 feet away.
I know. It was amazing. It was amazing. And all my wife could get out when she got up there was, I love you so much.
That's adorable.
Yep. There are worse things to say, that's for sure. I'm sure that he appreciated that. Well, Link, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day. You are clearly, of course, super busy as you always are, but I know that our leaders that are listening are going to really gain a lot of perspective from your unique way of how you've approached your career, and you clearly still are. I think that that's the most exciting thing, is that you also are seeing the longevity of what else is possible, and you keep working towards that as well. You're always just so much fun to talk to. I love getting to know people on more of a human level, and that was something that we talked about in an earlier podcast, of just fun things of that we might not know about you all of the time. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to check out My Learning for more resources and training related to today's podcast. And keep learning, keep growing, and keep playing well with others. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you.